Blog Talk Radio.
This is Monica Liel welcoming you to the LL Research radio program In the Now with Carla L. Record and Jim McCarty. Today is Friday, October 12, 2012. Carla L. Record is an author, mystic, seeker, and primary channel for LL Research. Jim McCarty is Carla's husband, the scribe for the Raw Contact, and president of LL Research. Please visit our websites, llresearch.org, home to over 1,500 channeling transcripts, 11 publications, The Law of One material, interviews, speeches, and more, and the community website, bringforth.org. That's bring, the number 4, th.org, featuring forums, blogs, chat rooms, and more. I'll be asking Carla and Jim questions that come from you. If you would like to ask a question live on the air, please call 646-595-2294 and press the 1 key when prompted. Again, that number is 646-595-2294. Or you can join the chat room at blogtalkradio.com/LLResearch. When submitting questions, please remember this is a Law of One Q&A. Try to keep your questions as spiritually oriented as possible. Again, I'm Monica Liel, and I'm talking with Carla L. Record and Jim McCarty of LL Research. Well, hi, Carla and Jim. How are you doing today?
Hey there.
We're doing well.
We are just suddenly realizing that it's getting cold and our leaves are starting to fall, and Jim's got gator blades on his mowers, and golly Moses, it's getting to be time for Halloween and Thanksgiving and, dare I say, Christmas. So astonishing to me.
Now, what are gator blades? You mean like roller blades?
Well, you know, most blades on a mower have a cutting edge on the two sides, but a gator blade is meant for mulching leaves. So besides the cutting edge, on behind the cutting edge, it's got these kind of, well, they look like teeth, you know, and they stand up about an inch tall, so that if you block the discharge chute and keep the leaves under the cutting deck, they get pulverized and they just disappear.
Ah, okay. I had not heard that term before. Well, I sure wish you could send some of those leaves down my way. I'd love to have them for my compost bin.
Many.
Yeah. Well, so yeah, we are getting close to the holidays, so it's in the air. Do y'all have any quick announcements before we start?
Not really. We really don't. It's been a real quiet week. Have you had anything that you've got that you want to talk about?
No, not really. Just
yeah,
plumbing.
You know, it's one of those. Gary and I are talking about the beginning of the season for the fundraiser for this year and about the future and what we can do to help wanderers, and we're having a good time sending emails back and forth trying to get a hold of a vision that is, you know, common to us all, towards which we can work, because you can't just do what you've always done, you know, and serve your seekers, because everything is evolving, everything is changing all the time. So it's you know, we really want to keep our ears out and just find new ways to serve. It's I guess company, you know, for profit type company does this. You know, they do market research, you know, how can we sell something? And it's not that we have anything to sell, but it's just how can we ask, you know, what do we want to ask our volunteers to do? Would they like to have downloads to play on their, you know, trips? You know, we've got a lot of requests for audios of sessions, you know, Ross sessions and Kuo sessions, and we're working to get those into the store. It just sort of changes a commute ride into a really nice time, sort of a magical time with good energy. And that's one thing we're really working on. It takes a lot to do just even one, you know, because you have to go through and take out, you know, through the tape and take out things like when you turn the tape over, you know, so that it's a smoother listen. And so that's sort of what we're involved with here. And it's kind of exciting. I think it's always fun. But it's the kind of fun that you enjoy every day rather than it being any announcement-making thing.
Okay, well, we definitely look forward to that. I know there is a lot of interest in those audios.
Yeah.
I'm going to go ahead and go to our opening riff. This is from Kuo from September 18th, 1994, channeling session. This is Kuo. As it is the latter portion of the cycles before the phenomenon this instrument calls the coming of the new age, many of those who are seeking at this time are those who have, by seniority of vibration, been given the opportunity of incarnating at a time when both the positive polarity and the negative polarity are attempting to increase the intensity of their distortions toward service to others for the positive entities and service to self for the negatively polarizing entities. In this environment, both the positive and the negative of polarization shall naturally seem more extreme. And so it is that within your culture at this time, there are many whose seeking of the truth is outstanding and whose efforts to learn the lessons of love are substantial and persistent. At the same time, those involved in seeking negative polarization are attempting in a marked manner to create negatively polarizing situations, which may express the utmost in negative orientation. Consequently, there are legions of those who think nothing of stealing or killing, some for a holy reason, supposedly, but many for no reason except the attraction of power. It is against this in your history that the seeking for truth now goes on upon your sphere. The rules, shall we say, have not changed, but the experience is more intense for all upon your sphere.
Thank you, Monica. I reached back to this one because I thought it would be good to touch on what do you do if you're a wanderer and you're here? I suppose one of the questions that we get most frequently is, everything is so horrible, why in the world did I come here? I would just want to go away. I can't stand this place. It's just full of negativity, and I just really want to go home, you know, that kind of phone home, kind of poignant, the yearning desire not to be here. And I think, it's to those people who feel that they are wanderers, I want to bring you back to before this incarnation, when you decided in all sincerity that you wanted to risk coming through the veil of forgetting to incarnation on planet Earth because you hoped to make a difference. You hoped to lighten the consciousness. We could see that harvest was nigh, and the fields, so-called, were white with harvest. And yet, where were the workers for the harvest? And so we wanted to join the brothers and sisters of sorrow that were attempting to raise the consciousness of the planet. And you do that not by anything public. You do it by raising your own consciousness. So, you know, you dived through the veil of forgetting, risking continuing to forget who you are and why you came. And at some point you woke up. Maybe it was because of our material, maybe because of something other people have said, maybe it was just something that happened. All of a sudden you knew that you had to step outside the box because that was not who you were. The box had to be left behind. And all of a sudden, you're in this place where you really feel substantially uncomfortable a lot of the time. And basically, you just have to realize, you have to have faith if you want to stay true to the reasons that you came. You have to have faith that you and your higher self together planned this incarnation in such a way that you would always be able to deal with it. It might press you to the edge, but you always would be able to deal with the difficulty. And the reason that wanderers can do that is because they believe in themselves. They believe that they can make a difference. And they go about making that difference by the discipline of their own personality, rather than something grand and something public. It's much more the living of the life in joy and with the realization that all things in life can be made sacred by the person who views them as sacred. It is the intention and the energy that you put into chores that creates the universe in which you live. If you're going to the cleaners and you're going to the grocery and you're going to pick up this and that, and then you are going to go home and you've got duties at home and you're sort of going through your day on a Saturday and hoping to find, you know, some time to watch football or baseball or basketball. All of these things are happening right now. You can let it be mundane. You can feel that it's just a bother and a nuisance, or you can invest these homely chores and errands with a spiritual energy. And instead of being a victim or a schlemiel, all of a sudden you are a priest with a universe that is both sacred and beloved. So it's all how you think in your mind. Now, I realize what it looks like out there. That's because positive energy tends to be quiet, not because the head is bowed or the energy is small, but because there is no desire to use other people in ways that end up being cruel and make people suffer. So what makes the headlines is the bleeding faces of soldiers as they're carried off the field of battle, and the similarly bleeding entities on the gurneys that are carried off to the hospital after a gang war. And there are so many ways, corporate ways, military ways, that we've almost enculturated the myth of the need to suffer and the need to be victimized. That's the way it looks because there aren't any headlines for people who just simply love. Very seldom are there headlines for that. Occasionally, Mother Teresa will make the headlines. But for the most part, this energy of sacred living and giving to others and to the Creator goes almost unnoticed by the culture, because the culture is interested in the movements of power and money and who's king of the hill, basically. So, is it discouraging? Well, of course it is. And can we do a lot about it? Not apparently, not visibly. But the thing of it is, there are already so many people that have awakened, according to the readings that we've gotten in the last few years, that the dragon has lost. The schemes to hijack our culture and keep it from rejoining the timeline at the dawn of the new age, you know, the winter solstice of 2012, have failed. We have rejoined the timeline, and we're all set to move with dignity and impeccable firmness of intention into the energies of the new age, the love, the joy, and the thanksgiving. These are what we create by the way we live and by the way we treat each other. And I greatly encourage all of you to take this to heart and take the words of St. Francis to heart. Lord, make me an instrument of your peace. If you like, you can read that prayer every day of your life. I certainly say it every day of my life, because it is so much clearer. The language is so simple, and it spells out the polarity of third density. Where there is hatred, let me sow love. Where there is injury, pardon. Where there is discord, union. Where there is doubt, faith. Where there is darkness, light. And where there is sadness, joy. Those simple directives can be depended upon in a way that is infinite. And so I just encourage us all to take heart. The rules have not changed. Certainly it feels like boot camp down here, and it is. But we can do this thing, and we are doing this thing, and it's a collaboration of all of us at L&L Research who offer a way to shine a light in the darkness and welcome the new age with no fear, but only joy. What have you to say on that?
I was engrossed in what you had to say, and I agree wholeheartedly with everything, that we just need to stay the course, to keep the faith, and do those mundane things we do every day with as much joy and purpose as we possibly can. We labor in an environment in which we will probably not be noticed, and but we will have an effect, and it is something that is building and cumulative, and eventually the light will shine brightly for all to see.
Carla, you mentioned we have rejoined the time lateral. Is this something that was that a point in time that we rejoined it, or, you know, has it already happened, or is it happening right now? Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
The readings say that it has happened, that the energies of positivity are too great now for the planet as a whole to be hijacked. It can't happen. And all the negative energy in the world is not going to keep you and I and the people that are listening from remembering who we are. And as long as we can remember who we are and why we came here, and that's what we're doing, you know, we're doing it well. according to the Confederation of Angels and Planets. We're doing it very well. And certainly we're not doing it perfectly, but that's not necessary. It's not necessary that we manifest perfection. If we could do that, we wouldn't even be here. We have some learning still to do, you know, as well as service. We came here to learn in ways that we set out for ourselves. So, does that answer your question?
I was wondering if it was a particular point, like there's so much significance about the date 1221, that is that a demarcation at which time we are definitely rejoined, or has, you know, was there a particular point in time?
No, that really isn't. That's just a time when one era ends and another one begins, like, you know, Happy New Year or your birthday, or you know, it's like the change from Pisces to Aries. Is that the next one? I don't
know. Yeah.
And you know, if you're born on the 27th of February, you're Pisces. If you're born on the last day, you're an Aries. I mean, it's just like the clock striking it. It's for the planet. That is involved with the planet itself. That's when the planet is fully accepting of fourth density vibrations. In other words, the light that carries a denser amount of information. Say, if it were a diamond, it would have more facets. You can load it with a ton more information than you can third density light. That's the problem that people are having. In addition to all the horrible headlines that you see from the negative side, all the killing and all the sadness. Let's see, where was I, Mick?
Talking about the time of December 21st being the striking of a clock.
Yeah, right. The energies of fourth density are hitting us. And insofar as we can accept them by living in fourth density values, that's a good thing. But if there's anything that we have left to the shadow side and have not claimed as our own self, then that shadow side is going to come up and sort of be in our face. And we will have to acknowledge things about ourselves that we didn't want to acknowledge, maybe, because all things are one. So we contain both the positive and the negative. And what we do with that negative energy is to redeem it by resetting the intention for which, you know, that energy is done. If you can reset the energy of anger, for instance, to help you be more persistent and give you grit to stay the course, then you've redeemed that shadow side. You've given it something to do that is within its vibratory ability, and have redeemed it. And so if you have neglected something, if you've shoved something away all your life, you have not wanted to look at this as something you could possibly be or experience, that's what's going to be in your face, whether it's direct or whether it's indirect and comes to you through the analogies that occur in relationships and the circumstances of life changing. So
are you saying
more intense?
Go ahead.
That's it.
Are you saying that's what's going on right now as we approach December 21st, or are you saying that's what's going to, is that going to increase after December, or do you think we're going to get some relief in December?
Well, I think insofar as we go ahead and do the work, we're going to get relief. Insofar as we are able to say, yes, I am that too, and then and then put your arms around that shadow side and love it and ask it to help you and work for you instead of manifesting in such an ugly way. To the extent that you can do that, all of a sudden you will be living in heaven on earth, because the creation of that positive fourth density value is supported completely by the vibrations that we are in. And that is probably as true now as it will be after the date, because things happen in the inner realms before they a good deal of time before they happen in the outer realms.
Okay, you've pretty much answered the next question, actually, but I'm going to do a little follow-up question on that. This isn't really a question from any particular person, but just kind of a composite question from the forum. There's been a topic that's come up, and there were several people participating in this discussion, talking about how they were seeing a lot of, they were experiencing a lot of turmoil in their lives. Some of them had had breakups, they'd, you know, relationships ending, chaos in their families, things like that. And a few people were expressing anguish about this, like, wow, here it is, October. We've got 2 months until Ascension, and all this stuff's falling apart. You know, I'm not ready. Oh, my God. And there seems to be a lot of fear that we might not be ready for December, and yet all of this catalyst is bubbling up to the surface. And one of the main themes that was talked about was this ending of relationships and having regret about mistakes, you know, past mistakes. Well, if only I hadn't done this, you know, if only I hadn't cheated on her, if only I hadn't, you know, whatever. And how do you reconcile that? You said embrace your shadow self, that aspect of your nature. How do you embrace something that in your mind was a mistake and resulted in a negative outcome, and there's no way you can go back and fix it and make it better? You can't make it, you know, you can't get back with that person that you broke up with or whatever
right.
the case may be. So how do you embrace it and make it right in that sort of situation, just relationships in general?
I think that we've been trained in life to think of, oh my gosh, you know, if I don't do this, I'm going to go to hell. If I act badly enough, you know, I can't get into heaven. And it's very, you know, the Bible supports a lot of this, you know, with, you know, many are called but few are chosen, blah, blah, blah. And it's just on and on about people just being, you know, the wheat and the chaff will be gathered together and the chaff will go into the fire. You know, and it's a scary thing. And, you know, there's a lot of teaching from the pulpit about an angry Old Testament God. And so that really affects our thinking, even though the energies offered for consideration by the philosophy of the Confederation are mild and gentle, and there is no judgment. There is no failure. There is only a matter of what are you vibrating at right now. If you're vibrating in a way that is congruent with fourth density vibration, then you're in fourth density. If you're vibrating in third density light, then you're third density. And it's not that you're going to go into the fire. It's that you're going to be living in another third density environment for a while, doing this lesson plan again, and seeing, you know, if you want to make that choice for service to self or service to others, and then just go as hard as you can to make that happen in your life. I don't think that people realize enough that spiritual things are not a matter of manifestation as much as they are a matter of intention. And if you intend beautiful things and you fall short according to your own judgment. Okay, you know, pick yourself up, dust yourself off, and do it again, because there is no, there's no judgment on the part of the Creator or any agent of the Creator. It's a simple matter of, let's see, where am I vibrating now? Where am I in the school of life? And, it, you know, every once in a while you get this check. Well, you could get the check any day of your incarnation if you could see your violet ray. And a lot of people have tried, you know, by different magnetic-type photography to get a picture of your violet ray to see how you're vibrating. But I don't put much faith in any of that, because we don't have the technology or the ability to take a snapshot of our violet ray. But when we have moved into past the veil of forgetting and are once again in the inner realms where there is full knowledge of our situation, then it's much clearer, and we're able to basically heal those things that we have done badly in the incarnation and we haven't forgiven ourselves for. Now, you can wait until the end of your incarnation to do this forgiving and just spend some time healing from it. Or you can do a modified 12-step program for yourself. Try to apologize to anybody that you feel you have wronged. And if they're not here anymore, then do the best that you can to offer them prayers of requests for forgiveness. To my mind, the person that we most have to forgive is ourselves. We know that we have made mistakes. We know that as we watch those mistakes result in miserable situations. And in terms of our culture, it's all our fault. What do you do about it? You put the brake on karma by forgiveness. Forgiveness of the other person, forgiveness of the self, and forgiveness of the action. You don't forgive yourself because you're good. You forgive yourself because of the healing energy that it brings about. You forgive yourself because you see that you are, at heart, a beautiful person. And if you hold judgment over yourself from the things that you have done wrong, you will create for yourself a miasma, a smog of unforgiveness and hardness that doesn't go away until you let it go away. Does that make sense? Jim, could you help out on, because this point is very important, to forgive yourself even though you were wrong.
Right. It's something that is very difficult to do. I think a lot of us have come here with the desire to have more compassion for ourselves as well as for others, of course. But sometimes one of the ways that we generate more compassion for other people is by setting ourselves up to face catalysts in situations in which we may well fail and may feel a lack of compassion for ourselves. I know this has been a part of my own incarnational pattern, that the difficulties that I feel I have failed cause me to feel a lack of compassion for myself, and then when I begin to investigate myself and how I feel about myself, I see that I'm trying the best I can, that there are times I will fall short, and that I am deserving of compassion as much as is anyone else. And when I'm able to feel that compassion for myself and to forgive myself, as you were talking about, then somehow it releases this energy of love that is available for others as well. So I guess it's the old dictum for the physician, heal thyself. So first we need to really work on ourselves so that we are able to heal ourselves and forgive ourselves, and then we are able to do that for others as well.
Now, what about the embracing your shadow self aspect of it that you mentioned earlier? How do you embrace it and love it if it was something that was clearly, or at least you feel that it was a mistake, you know, something undesirable, some negative trait? How do you embrace it and love it?
Well, Dan Fortune writes in her book on psychic self-defense of a time when she was in a deep state of unforgiveness. I can't remember the circumstances. It's been a long time since I read that book. But I remember the passage that she talks about. She says that in her meditations, all of a sudden, she opened her eyes and there was a big, scary wolf at the foot of her bed, snarling at her. And she looked at it, and it looked at her. And she was given the grace to open her heart and open her arms and embrace this wolf. And then the wolf came into her arms, tamed by the love and the forgiveness that she showed. Undeserving though it was, because the wolf was ready to chew up Dion, you know, and it was a very real thing. But when she opened her arms and the wolf came into her arms, it completely changed form. And she realized that it was a part of herself that was unforgiven and that she had finally been able to forgive. You don't forgive people because they've become right. You forgive people because they don't deserve it, but you forgive them anyway. I mean, that's forgiveness. It's easy to forgive somebody when the person is doing, you know, so much better and feels terrible about it and everything. But what about the person that doesn't feel terrible about it? Then how do you forgive, you know, the bully, the murderer, the person in your life that tries to victimize you? Well, you forgive those people because you see their soul self and know the truth of them. And so the Creator in you, as Namaste means, embraces the Creator in that entity, whatever it is. And that truth is overwhelming in its purity. And it simply dissolves the evil. You don't resist evil. You forgive it, and then you move on in your merry way. This is a very difficult point to get across because we're so used to judgment. Well, was that person really right, or was he really wrong? Does he deserve my judgment or not? If you think like that, then you're thinking in third density terms. And you're still in the box. You're still in the either or of non-spiritualized reality. As you jump out of the box, you jump out of the necessity to see things at the level of this illusion. And you choose to see something higher and something more true about that person, whether it's you or someone else. You choose to see the Creator in that person. And the person that you have forgiven feels it. And it is always possible that that energy will heal a relationship, a situation. And if it doesn't, it heals you and releases you from the inevitability either or.
When you're doing this forgiveness for another person, do you think it's important to not be attached to any sort of outcome or result of your forgiveness?
Oh, certainly.
And and do you think that if we made a mistake in a relationship with someone, are we responsible for their reaction to our mistake?
Well, certainly. I mean, on the level of this world and its ways, we are completely responsible. What we missed when we're fighting and involved in third density energy is the truth that overrides third density energy, the truth of total unity, total forgiveness, total love. The place where that realization begins is within yourself. And if you just keep noticing the things that are bad about other people, if you keep thinking back to times when things were horrible for you and you hold that in your heart, you're holding yourself in third density energy. If you can let it go and constantly bring yourself past all the either-ors, all the was I right or was she right, all that kind of thinking, and spend your time loving and accepting love, you are vibrating fourth density. As I understand it, you are then vibrating in such a way that that the truth view is now capable of using fourth density light, and therefore you get to go on into fourth density. Now, people have seized on that 51%, you know, service to others. It's really hard to grade yourself in my 51% service to others. I mean, it's really hard, because how do you differentiate between the things that you're thinking that you don't do and the things that you inadvertently do that tell the truth about you? It's impossible to count and figure and say, okay, I've made it. I am now 51%. What you need to do is tend to the moment, tend to right now, tend to what you're vibrating, how you're vibrating, what your energy is doing. If you're not supporting the person the best that you can, that you're next to, then what you need to work on is seeing that person as the soul truth, the soul self that is the creator. And giving to that soul that is at the heart of that person the respect that person, that entity of the creator is due, and lifting off of the things that have done, you said and I said and she said and all that stuff, where you're trying to assign blame and see who's right and who's wrong. In a spiritual sense, it doesn't matter. I'm thinking right now of a wonderful chap who was a priest in Germany in the Second World War. He was put into prison because he wouldn't conform to the request of the people of Hitler's reign. He wouldn't do what they wanted, and so he was put in prison. And there were a lot of other people in prison, but each of them was in a solitary cell. They never saw anybody. And this priest knew what was he? Morse code. He knew Morse code. And every day he would tap out message after message of encouragement, and he would do a service every day using the pipes that, you know, when you hit a pipe in one cell, you know, you could hear it all over, you know, how pipes are. And these people were so heartened by his ministry that, you know, they were in an incredibly positive state of mind. And here they were, you know, in jail in these horrible, dark, solitary cells. But this priest had the strength to reach out to those people and treat them at the heart level and give them the food that is needed by us all, the love and the light that come through, however distorted it is, that come through Christianity or Buddhism or any other world religion. They are ways of getting to the Creator. They're ways of thinking about the Creator. And he was bringing them the truth of themselves by this energy that he was offering. This is what we all, you know, it's a good kind of picture of all of us. You know, we're in our solitary cell. We're in these bodies. We're never going to be one with anybody else. You know, there's flesh in between us and anybody else. No question about it. It doesn't look like we're all one. And yet, if we can, like, tap on the pipes that hold us all together, speak the loving words, think the loving thoughts, even, then we are tapping on the pipes that other people can hear. Maybe they don't even know that they're hearing them, the beautiful, the spiritual, the positive. But they know something good is happening, and, you know, maybe, you know, they then think, oh, he was a wonderful man. Well, he was a wonderful man, but it was the intention of his vision of everyone as worthy of his ministry that made them so strong in the face of this darkness and solitude.
Well, that brings to mind, the whole idea about how we affect others. I'd like to get a little clarification on the question I asked earlier, and I understand what you said about the 3D type of thinking about right and wrong and, you know, who was right and all that. And that was very, very profound what you said about that. I think that was really excellent. But while we are in the midst of that and we're doing that reflection, especially right now with all our negative traits, our shadow self coming up to the surface to be embraced and healed, as we're doing that reflection, excuse me, and we think, gosh, I made this mistake, I did this, and then that triggered a response in this other person who did XYZ, and maybe XYZ turned out to be a really negative action. Are we responsible for that person's negative action because our action, you know, because their action was a reaction to our action?
I'll have to take that because her phone has once again conked out toward the end. We got a new battery.
Uh-oh.
It didn't get here in time. I think it's, you know, what Carla had said before was that in the third density, there is a feeling of being responsible. And that, I think, awakens in us a metaphysical response that may or may not be successful in relieving that feeling of responsibility for the other person on the third density level. But it helps us to focus ourselves and to do internal work so that on a metaphysical level, we begin to reattach ourselves to that person and to anybody else that we may have offered any kind of a slight or a wrong. And we begin to heal ourselves on that level, which also heals the other person. On the third density level, we find a lot of difficulty in breaking through the traditional ways of resolving difficulties, trying to, you know, the legalistic types of, well, you owe me such and such because you did this to me. And we, in the metaphysical approach, are able to see ourselves and the other person as being one, so that as we forgive ourselves and heal ourselves, we do the same to the other person. So maybe I could put this phone on speakerphone so that we both could continue and finish the program that way.
Get me another phone. Okay, Jim's going to go get another phone for himself, and I can hold this
instead of using this headset. I don't know, but this poor little phone, I think, has had it. It needs to go to phone heaven. So let's pick up.
Okay.
And Jim now has a phone too, so we're both back.
Okay.
On.
Okay. Okay. Great. You sound fine. Okay. Well, did you have anything to add to that, Carla, or should I move on?
She didn't get to hear the whole question.
Oh. Okay. I was just asking. I really liked what you said about the thinking in terms of 3D versus thinking in terms of 4D.
Mm-hmm.
But I was asking for clarification on something that I asked you earlier, like if, say, as we're doing that reflection, as we're looking at our shadow self coming up and all these issues coming up to be embraced and healed, and we realize that we made a mistake with a certain person and their reaction to our mistake was something very negative, is it appropriate to take on the burden of responsibility for their reaction to our mistake?
Well, it's appropriate to ask their forgiveness with every ounce of sincerity in your body. But it's not appropriate to accept their judgment because we are, by our very nature, going to make mistakes. And it's terrible when we make a mistake that we can't take back and we see that it did harm. It's awful. I mean, I have spent years, trying to forgive myself because, Don died and I couldn't stop it. And I saw it coming. I saw that his mental illness was getting deeper and deeper. And I tried this and I tried that and I said this and I didn't say that. And, time moved on and eventually he committed suicide. And for a good 6 years, I disliked myself to the point that I thought I deserved to die. My judgment was fierce. And I had no idea how in the world to change that because it was just, I didn't keep him alive. And I was, responsible for his care and feeding. I mean, that's what mates do for each other. And I just let him down. How do you forgive yourself for something like that? Well, there's magic involved. There really is. I don't know if you can do it when all these emotions are pouring through you. At first you have to heal yourself up to the point where you can think reasonably and calmly. And when you look back on that, you don't get pulled into it and live it over and over again. This, which was what I did for 6 years. And I finally saw myself grieving. I didn't sleep much in those days, and I would spend a lot of nights up all night just grieving, and I suddenly realized in a beautiful moment that I had achieved a perfect grief, that I understood the heart of grieving, and there was a purity to that emotion that I had refined and refined and honed through those 6 years and made slowly, very slowly, very, very slowly into a thing of beauty. And so I saw the perfection and the beauty of my grief. And that didn't change anything except that it changed my ability to look at the situation from a higher level and say, yeah, that was really horrible. And then I forgive myself.
Wow.
And after I became able to forgive myself for not keeping Don alive, I became a much stronger person that was able to counsel, say, a person that's going through a lot of ugly stuff, and I would be able to listen to it without being pulled into it. And I would just, keep remembering and thinking about the soul of that person being beautiful And I would just encourage, you know, that person to strive towards a purity of feeling, and so that, you know, you've honed that emotion into a beauty that does heal you. And I don't think any therapy can really do that for you. It's something that has to happen within yourself.
Okay. And is there any tip on how to make that happen in yourself, or is it something that just unfolds naturally?
You just have to keep trying. You have to not give up. Pardon me for splitting infinitives. You have not to give up. It's very difficult to keep on keeping on when everything looks grim and there's no way in the world tomorrow's going to look any better. And yet, you ask yourself to do it again. And it still looks grim, but you ask yourself to do it again. Lord, make me an instrument of thy peace. And again, and again. And you don't stop. Not for anything. You don't stop because you're being criticized. You take it on the chin, and you keep on. Lord, make me an instrument of your peace.
Okay, thank you, Carla. We are just about out of time, and I know there's a couple of questions in the chat room, and we are going to have to do those questions next week. And we will definitely, well, yeah, let's see. Let's see what the question is first, and I'll let you decide, Carla, because we have about 3 minutes left.
The question is,
would Carla express on someone seeing themselves from third person, having an objective perspective in regards to human interactions when it comes to friction or drama, where that you see the other person's perspective as well without judgment? Now, Dream Master, are you saying that you're seeing yourself from the third person? You kind of don't see yourself. You're seeing other people's perspectives, and you're asking if that's okay or normal? Is that the question?
No, I think I'm saying that you have to, insofar as you're able, enter into your own heart so that you are living in your heart and letting the consciousness of love obliterate other energies. And you keep on loving, and you keep on, and you keep on. Jim, can you help me here? Because I'm kind of running out of words.
I think you said it well. To persist is something that is very hard to do after so many failures, but it is the path to eventual winning through. And as we open our hearts in love to ourselves and to others and persistently do this, then eventually we do learn it on the soul level, and it comes through and it shines through in third density. We just have to keep on.
You know, people write me every day. Money is amazing, and I'm given credit for way more than I deserve. Oh, you're wonderful. Oh, thank you so much. And I appreciate absolutely everything that people have to say. I really do. And yet I know in my heart that I fail frequently. But it's okay, because what they're seeing is the Christ in me, to put it in Christian terms, or the Guru in me, or Ram in me, or, you know, all the words, just Allah in me. What they're seeing is me being transparent and the light shining through me. And that doesn't, you know, affect the this and the that and the details and who's right and who's wrong and forgiving and, you know, the whole thing. It overrides and it blesses any situation.
Thank you. We are out of time. I want to let our listeners know that we are here every Friday evening at 8 o'clock. Eastern Standard Time. Please join us next week, October 19th. Check out llresearch.org and bringforth.org. That's bring the number 4th.org. You've been listening to In the Now with Carla L. Record and Jim McCarty. See you next week.